Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We call ourselves Baltimore Positive these days. We've had several incarnations around here, including our Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We'll have the Raven Scratch-Offs to give away from the Maryland Lottery, as well as our friends at Jiffy Lube Multi-Care, powering up our Luke Jones back and forth to football games and football practices. But Luke, I think the only thing that would make you happier than covering baseball and football is that if I stuck you on the professional wrestling beat, I think it's the other thing that you're fully capable and aware of. And once a year, you and I do a little WrestleMania, and I've known you about 16 years now, and I've threatened that I would bring on some of my old wrestling goons back onto this program. And this guy's one of the original OGs. And when I said that Gary Michael Capetta would be returning here, and we've done a couple of hours of radio through body slams and books and appearances around town. And certainly in my childhood, he appeared at 11 a.m. on Channel 20 every Saturday, and at 4 p.m. every at Channel 45 every Saturday. And if I could get the rabbit ears to work out of Philly, sometimes I could get Channel 17 at 5 o'clock, figure out what's going up the spectrum with Dusty Rhodes and superstar Graham Bob Backlund. Gary Michael Capetta is back. Luke is here. I think we're going to mix it up and just do some old school wrestling. But first things first, Gary, I don't have any real reason to like come at you. There's no wrestling thing or whatever, other than like I'm cleaning out relationships and old school stuff. And I'm like, I haven't talked wrestling with you in a while. And it's just so, sometimes wrestlers die and crazy stuff happens. And I'm like, I got to reach to you and just say, how are you? Did you get out of Jersey? Did you ever make it out of Allentown?
I'm good. I'm good. Hey, Luke, did he call us wrestling goons? Is that what he said?
I think so. I think so. I mean, normally it's wrestling geeks, and I'm an analytics guy for sports, baseball and football anyway. So I'm used to hearing those types of terms of endearment from him.
I think we need to just ignore him and just have some wrestling talk.
That
You
sounds good.
and
Take over the show, man. It'd be like 10 o'clock Saturday night.
I.
I'm out of here, man. No, wait, Gary, what's going on in your life? Other than I will imitate you. I have a little bit of coffee from Royal Farms here going on. And usually when I bring you in, I do the whole thing. I've done it for you. It makes me blush, but it makes me feel 11 years old again with Bruno and Stan Stasiak and Bobo and Haystacks and like all of that. And we hear so much on the downside. I mean, I would every time I always ever saw you loved wrestling. You always loved wrestling. You weren't kayfabe about it, but it is one of the defining fun parts of your life being in a couple of Hall of Fames, right?
Absolutely. If I was going to go by Royal Farms, I'd go for the chicken. Forget
There
about
you
the
go.
coffee. The chicken, the best fried chicken in the world, you guys have there. And I'm in Florida
And
these
you can't get
days.
it. You can't
I
get it.
can't get it too far away. I mean, I would from Jersey, I would have driven 3 hours to get the
My
chicken.
Royal Farms people love to hear that, man. I got a Chicken Palooza shirt for you. It's coming out, you know.
Yeah, I expect to get a bucket delivered here in Florida for that
Absolutely.
promo.
How is life?
Things are good. I do conventions once in a while. I go out and guest ring announce once in a while. Just, it depends. I just take it as it comes. I still dip into the product every once in a while. I'll tune in WWE or AEW and see what's going on and see what they're doing. There's a local promotion in Florida that I've latched on to that I like. And every once in a while, I'll make my way down to Winter Haven, Florida to check it out. Made some friends down here through wrestling and just taking it as it comes. Nothing high pressure. Those days are over.
Well, the last time Luke and I talked was WrestleMania time, and this is where I'm going to defer to both of you gentlemen for what is going on in the current world, because when I put wrestling on, it appears to me like Vince is still running it. Vince always, it's kind of like Cuba, I said, you know what I mean? Kind of like Castro, like there was never going to be an end to any of that. And there has been to some degree. And Luke, I'll let you pick it up into the current side of this because he's mentioning AEW. And other than the association to the Jacksonville Jaguars and my friend Alex Marvez, I don't really know much about current wrestling, but Luke really stays up with it, Gary.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Luke,
Gary.
what do you like that's going on these days, Luke?
I was just going to ask you that because, I mean, obviously, full disclosure, I was born in 1983. I was a typical Hulkamaniac WWF fan. As I've gotten older and with the iteration of WWE Network and the tape libraries and everything being available, I love NWA Crockett stuff. And in the early 90s, I kind of veered away from wrestling and got back into it in the late 90s, right after you left WCW. So I myself, as a fan, missed a lot of your work, but having gone back and watched so much of it, you were part of this for such a long time, over such an interesting time, going back to the latter territory days and then WWF going national. But when you see what it's become today, how surprised are you, first of all? And second of all, what do you like? And, I don't want you to be negative, but from a constructive criticism standpoint, what about it has changed that maybe isn't for the better, let's say?
I was during the time when you were a kid and a fan, I was on weekly TV for 21 consecutive years. And in 1995 is when I left WCW. And then I did little Ring of Honor. I did little here, there, and elsewhere. But like any entertainment form, things evolve. Whether we're talking about like country music is not what country music was, back during Patsy Cline's day. It's different. Like rock and roll has evolved. The circus has evolved. So I look at things from that point of view. As long as the kernel of what pro wrestling is remains, then I'm good. And then I'm not one of these old grouchy guys that says, everything in the past was great and today it's just horrible. No. That's not true. But you have just by the fact that today's wrestlers are lighter and actually more athletic. It's a different product. It's back when I was doing those weekly TV shows, everybody was a behemoth. You were small if you were 230 pounds. And today, you have guys that are 160 pounds, 170 pounds. So of course you're going to have more flying. You're going to have more acrobatics. You're going to have like a different style. It's not going to be the stomp and grind, punch in, kick in style that I was brought up on. But the key is, and I fear for today's athletes, and they're much more athletic than the guys were back in the day. I fear for their future health because the art of the game, which is what I talk about in my book, Body Slams, is taking something and making it look dangerous, but it's not dangerous. Like the chance that someone's going to get seriously injured is very slim. But today, these guys think they're indestructible. They think they're video characters, like they're real people, and your body is not supposed to do the things, it's not supposed to withstand the kinds of landings that they take, when they fly out of the ring and on a table. And it's that I fear and that I have less appreciation for. Because it gets away once again from the art of the game, where it's like magic. It's supposed to be like magic, where you're looking at it and you're saying, "Oh no, I don't look at what he's doing. I can't look at." But nobody is really in danger. Today, the guys are in danger because of what they do. Keep on taking it to another level of physicality that the body is just not made to withstand. So that's one of the things I look at. I want to maintain the magic. I want to maintain the art of the game.
Yeah, it almost feels like we've had this trade-off where the house show schedules and guys aren't necessarily working 310 dates a year anymore, especially at the WWE, AEW, even TNA level. But the intensity of those matches, as you mentioned, the physical demands that guys are putting on their bodies. And I come back to a question, and this goes to what you just said about the magic, the why, right? When you see some of these matches, especially understanding how much, just how much weekly TV there is. I mean, WWE, 5 hours going on, 6 hours. AEW has 5 hours. It's just a lot. And I ask the question of why. And I feel like in the modern day, yeah, the schedules are a little bit better, but the matches are so much more physically demanding for these guys. I'm in agreement with you. And I always go back to that question, why? And I think WWE's done a better job with this since Triple H has taken over and runs the creative process. But there are still times where I see these spots, and I can't imagine someone like you who's was in the business such a long time and seeing how much it's changed, where sometimes it makes sense, but there are a lot of times where I kind of say, why was that necessary in that specific spot?
I have two thoughts on that as to why. There came a time when the curtain was pulled down, and it has become easier to be a wrestler. Years ago, nobody knew how to become a wrestler, and competitors learned from other guys. They went on the road, they were apprentices. Now there are wrestling schools all over the place run by people who have no idea what the whole kernel of the art of the game is. So a breakdown in the education of what it is. And then just naturally with the culture, as I mentioned before, video games. They try to portray in both their look and both in how they dress and ultimately what they do physically. I think if you look at video games and what they're portraying in the ring, you're going to see they're similar. So it's a different cultural effect that just because we didn't have video games like that, where we had Pac-Man, we didn't have like a 3D kind of screen and people actually battling it out. You would see that in the movies, but you wouldn't see it on a daily basis. So I think the current cultural influence also contributes to getting away from the art of the game. And but I think more than anything, the reason why WWE sticks closer to the art of the game is because they have their own training program. Nobody's going to go in that ring unless they have been with WWE behind the scenes and working out and being trained, as opposed to AEW, which is very much a car crash. And it's because these are guys that are coming from the indies, from all different influences, many trained by others that didn't know what they were doing. And some of them are making it up as they go along. So therefore, you have a product which is like an indie with millions of dollars behind it. So it's dressed up real pretty, but if you look at not all of, but too many of the wrestlers, it's what worked on the indies, and that's what they're doing. And very often what works on the indies is you want instant gratification. So when you need instant gratification, meaning the fans, you need to have a reaction from the fans all the time, you rush through what you're doing. There's less build there. There's no selling of a move. A guy will take a devastating move and he'll pop right up. Well, that doesn't make any sense, except if you're looking for an immediate gratification, and that's what they're used to from the indies. So I think that's why WWE is superior in the sense of everyone's on the same page. And they incorporate some of the nonsense violence, but just enough to make the people happy, because unfortunately, that's what fans have come to expect. So you can't ignore it. You have, I mean, ever since ECW, they have, from those days, they have, expected tables and chairs and all kinds of craziness. But I think also what if they get away from the rules, the basic rules of wrestling, then they're losing opportunities to create drama. For instance, and a tag team match. If you just can get in by slapping someone's back without them even knowing it, then you are eliminating the hand-to-hand touch, the drama of reaching out. You're in trouble. You need help from your partner. But the only way he can come in is if you tap hands and you reach out and he's reaching out to you and it'll come so close and then you get pulled back into the center of the ring. But like a Mexican style is everybody can run in and out whenever they want. And that leads me to another situation that we didn't have culturally. And that is all of the young wrestlers coming through because of this wonderful internet that you and I are now talking on, they're exposed to all different styles from around the world. So they're seeing Mexican wrestling, they're seeing Japanese wrestling, they're seeing German wrestling, they're seeing wrestling from Australia. And somehow it all gets smushed together. And so they obey the rules when it's convenient for what they want to do, and they don't obey the rules when they don't want to. And that becomes confusing. What I would rather see would be a North American wrestling show, and then we have a Mexican style match in there. We have a Japanese style match in there, so that you don't smear everything together, and then you come out with like a fuzzy product that someone that's doesn't know wrestling is like they have no idea what the rules are, because they abide by rules whenever it's convenient, and they ignore rules whenever they don't want to follow a rule. So that's another situation. It's the young wrestler's exposure to many different styles that gets all smeared together. Schmear is my word for the day.
I like that. Gary Michael Capetta is our guest, longtime wrestling ring announcer, wrestling business aficionado, author, also teacher of Espanol, amongst other things. Luke Jones is here riding shotgun. Luke and Gary getting after modern things. Gary, I want to go in a way back machine for you because I'm sure you did all of this in your book and discussing, we'll get to kayfabe in a minute because it's a term I use a lot of in real life because real life has become sort of kayfabe where in whatever room you're in, you have to sort of obey by whatever rules are there and sort of play along. When did you get involved? I literally, you were kind of a youngish cat when I came on to wrestling in the mid 70s. And I know you were a part of it for a few years. I know there was a Philadelphia background in Allentown, but give me the elevator speech. And it was before Luke's time, but you did come into my life, championship wrestling, all-star wrestling, all of those things for our audience, Channel 45 at 4 o'clock every day. With Ernie Boston reading the lead news, now professional wrestling. And then you would come on. But the part of the business that later in life you learn when guys like you write books and you meet Bruno Sammartino, and there's a whole internet for Ken Patera and Greg the Hammer Valentine to tell old stories. But for you, in your entree into this and what the rules were, what the idea of it was, and certainly in your role, which was probably read something off a sheet of paper, be a ring announcer, and then really it became a television thing, you really went on an incredible carpet ride. Very few people were there who are still here. Gorilla Monsoon, other people who were a part of that, and Titan, and everything that was recorded here in Baltimore, and the Lord Alfred Hayes days, and they had the studios here in Baltimore. But you came at it how? And you said if you wanted to be a wrestler, No one knew how. I would think you knew how, but you had to figure out how to get involved because I'm guessing you might have just been a fan, right?
I was a fan, and they didn't have an announcer one night, and I volunteered. That's how I got into the business, as crazy as that is. And I was 21, and Gorilla Monsoon, who was part owner of the promotion, which I didn't know at the time, I just knew him as a wrestler. He liked what I did when they brought me in off the street. They didn't bring me in. I was sitting at ringside, and they didn't have an announcer, so I just
What were you
volunteered.
doing in your life at this point that would give any indication that you would spend 50 years in wrestling?
Nothing. But what I was doing in life was I just graduated from college at 21 years old. And as you said, my early years, I began to teach Spanish. That would have been like a few months later. So
And
I
that's
had
the life
a
you led. You were a school teacher. That's what your
yeah, and then I
primary vocation
moonlighted.
was.
Yeah,
Even
and
though
I
we knew
moonlighted.
you on weekends, that was something. Now, those were taped, right? In Allentown, correct?
At first, it was Philadelphia for me, and then that moved to Allentown. I went to Hamburg. They had two syndicated shows. One was taped every third Tuesday, and then one was taped every third Wednesday. So two consecutive nights. And when I began the TV, which was I was 23, I was doing it out of Philadelphia. And then about 18 months later, they moved it to Allentown. So it was Allentown, Philadelphia or
What years are
Allentown.
these? Is this 71, 2, 3, 4? What years are
So
these?
70, well, I started TV in 76.
Wow. So we're not far off then. I thought you may have been around for Koloff, Bruno. You came right at the end of Bruno then. I mean, I was here at the Baltimore Civic Center on April 30th, 1977, when superstar Gramp cheated. His feet were on the ropes. And
Yeah.
but that wasn't, you were brand new then, huh?
Yeah. I started when I was 21 in 74. And then after 2 years, Buddy Wagner, who had been the ring announcer for their A show, passed away. And Monsoon, who was, as I said, co-owner, brought me in. And I did the TV show for the next 8 years on for WWE. And
About
I
Gino
think
a little bit, because I don't know that I've ever asked you about that, and I know you've written about it, but my mom loved Gorilla Monsoon. She
wonderful,
loved him.
wonderful guy. Yeah. He's the reason that I am in, have been in the business for 50 years now. I mean, he's my guardian angel. He's the man. When he lost his partnership shares, he lost his power, and then he had less say in what was going on, and that's sort of when I moved on in 85. So I was with WWE for 11 years, from 74 to 85, and I did the TV from 76 to 83.
Luke, go ahead,
Gary.
man. Have some fun because I have a cool old book. It's not your book, but I'm going to go through it in a minute, and we'll do some memories and some old wrestlers and stuff of my era. Because my first wrestling matches were in '77. I was all in until the mid '80s, but I've been on the radio 33 years. I've done tons of wrestling. You, any wrestler that would come on, we've done Dallas Diamond Dallas Page doing yoga and all that stuff. And Luke is always a part of this. So Luke, get after Gary Michael Capetta.
Gary, the younger wrestling fan, I mean, Vince McMahon has become synonymous with professional wrestling. I mean, there's no denying that. But what was Vince Sr. like? I think a lot of younger people know that Vince bought out his dad, took the company national, all of that. But what was Vince Sr. like in those latter days of the WWWF?
He was compared to his son, who was Vinny was like always brash. He was the boss's son, and he was the commentator for these TV shows that we were just talking about. The dad was more laid back, very refined, beautifully dressed. He didn't go after people, but he paid people to go after people. So For instance, at one point, he had a disagreement with Bruno Sammartino very, very early on. And it was before Bruno's championship reign, first championship reign. And he had Bruno blackballed. So Bruno wasn't able to wrestle in the United States. That was when he went to Canada and wrestled. So, yeah, he was. There was one time when I was doing the TV, and I thought I should have gotten a raise, and I didn't know that you would never that you shouldn't approach the big guy for a raise. I mean, the guy, the wrestlers would have never done that unless they were the champion. But what did I know? I was this kid who was 24, 25 years old. So at the TV, and it was the only time that I saw Vince Sr., I knocked on the little office door. I went in. Vince Sr.'s sitting there with Phil Zacco, who was the promoter, Arnold Skolin, who was a co-owner, Gorilla Monsoon, who was a co-owner. And I was ready for this meeting. Like, I had all kinds of comebacks. No matter what he said, I was ready, except for what he did say. So, I very politely, said, look, I'm getting, I think maybe I was making $60 per night. And so that's 3 hours, 3 weeks of television. So I was actually making $20 every week, like for every TV week. And I asked for a raise probably to 100, 100 and a quarter, something like that. And he just looked at me and he said, I can't afford it. This is the gazillionaire who owns all of Northeast Wrestling, like from Maine to DC out to Pittsburgh, packs the houses at the Baltimore Civic Arena and at the Spectrum and Madison Square Garden. And I can't afford it. I was speechless. But here's the deal. The McMahons could never ever tell you, yeah, you deserve it. Yeah, you did a good job. They would never want to make you secure in that way. At the end of the night, when I got paid, and we would get paid cash, the envelope would came to me, I opened it up, and it was the amount of money that I asked for. He gave me the raise, he just couldn't tell me that I deserved it. And every 3 weeks after that, that extra money was in the envelope.
That's a great
So
story. Gary Michael Capetta is here. Go ahead, Gary.
I had no problem with him. I mean, I had no problem with most of them. I had a problem with Junior, but I was telling you the things that Junior has been accused of in the current day. I have been telling people about Junior for years, but because he was successful, and because he was, no matter whether people in wrestling loved him or didn't, no one would ever say anything negative about the guy. And he was a real scum. So, I mean, he treated me so horribly. If you look at any TV that I did with WWE, and once, like I said, for 8 years, I was the ring announcer, you will never ever hear Vinny refer to me by name, ever. Let's go up to the ring announcer. That's it. I would get attacked by Jimmy Snuka. Oh, the ring announcer went down. George Steele would chase me out of the ring. Oh, what happened to the ring announcer? Maybe he's wearing cologne that the animal doesn't like. So he and I, we just never connected. But he's always been shady. But the dad is more refined. But when there was dirty work that needed to be done, he just had someone else do it to answer the question short term,
I want
short
to
form.
get back to Vince in a minute, but I want to have a little bit of fun because I found this book and our time is limited. Because Luke and I have to talk about the Orioles hot stove and we have to talk about the Ravens and Lamar and all this stuff. When I was a kid, I was a wrestling magazine aficionado. Gary, you know this. I'm sure Kevin Eck has crossed paths with you. Kevin Eck was my best friend in the whole world, all of my childhood, all of my youth. And Kevin and I ran together, and we did segments in his basement where I was Ivan Putski and he was, with hair dryers. We were kids, right? So in the 70s, we had the wrestling magazines, The Wrestler, Inside Wrestling, the Street Sheet. Sometimes at the matches, there would be a card. Some of those are $100 on the internet. I still have the one with from April 30th, 1977, when Billy Graham won the championship. But there was only one book ever in the Walden's bookstore at East Point Mall when I was a kid, and it had it, and it kind of fell apart. And I found it later in life. I've had this thing probably 30 years. I have your book too. I couldn't find it today, but I did find this book. It says Main Event. I don't know if you knew Roberto Morgan. This is 40 years old, this old school book, but it's got all the wrestlers of the day, and it was like a coffee table wrestling book from 1978, 78, with all these great names, the wrestlers of that era. And you go out and do shows and autographs, and people, fanboys like me, come at it. It is amazing in the modern era with the internet how everyone has had a story, right? Like, you don't say what happened to whomever. If even it's the executioners, you had to figure out who they were. But the stories for the internet and YouTube, it is incredible how ubiquitous it's become, how whatever was in the darkness with Vince, which was allowed to be there forever, including the Vice stories that pop up on my timeline, because Luke clicks on everything wrestling on WNSD. They think I'm a wrestling fan. But every Bruiser Brody, every tale of Von Erichs, all of the dark sides of wrestling and all of that. How so many things that were kayfabe that lived in darkness have been either me too'd or outed, or 50 years later, somebody like you comes and says, everybody knew Vince was a bad guy. I mean, that was pretty obvious.
Right. Also, I would beware, just like with general news, as to what you believe about what you hear, whether it be a shoot interview with an old-time wrestler. Either sometimes, like their memories aren't so great. Like mine isn't all that great. Sometimes, or they're spinning something, or they're not telling the truth. But once that gets put down on video, anyone that watches it will swear that that's the truth. That's how that happened. He was there. He said, so unless you are in the room yourself, you really don't know what happened, with whatever instance it is. So there's a lot of, a lot of tall tales that
Well,
I
here's
have.
something that's true. That right there is a superstar Billy Graham getting put into a maneuvering here by The Rock's grandfather. So, I mean, all sorts of weird things going on, right? The back in this book. And I haven't opened this book in 30 years, but when I
Even
start
my
to open
head.
it, there's pictures of Chief J. Strongbow and Ivan Putski in here that while and a chain match with Ivan Koloff and Bruno from the Garden back in 76. Wrestling has this glorious pull on all of us, including Luke.
The Rock's grandfather, Peter Maivia, he actually body slammed me in at Wagner College, Staten Island, New York. He was just having fun. He didn't hurt me in any way, but yeah, that would happen, that kind of
He
thing.
was the only dude in the 70s that had tattoos that I ever saw as a kid. Now everybody's got tattoos, right?
I know that's another thing, in talking about then and now, it's hard to look weird because everything weird has become normal.
Once you've done an Undertaker thing, right? Where do you go from there? Luke, what else you got for Gary? Including, I'm gonna let Gary promote his book as well because it makes a perfect holiday gift for everybody out there that likes old books and stuff like that. But Luke, you're just such a historian about all of the you and Kevin Eck and all my buddies, you really delve into this type of stuff and have great appreciation for people like Gary that tell you the stories, man.
Well, I think there's similarities with what we do in the professional, quote, real sports world compared to pro wrestling and sports, what sports entertainment has become. But Gary, what first thing I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, I know you got your start as a ring announcer in Wildwood, New Jersey, one of my favorite places, coffee mug right here. I
Oh,
go there every year with my
wow.
family. But going back to what I was just saying, what does it mean for you as someone who did it as long as you did to know that you're part of the soundtrack of the history of professional wrestling? I mean, we think of commentary, Jim Ross, you know, Vince McMahon, Gorilla Monsoon, all those, but the ring announcers, I mean, the Fink for years in WWF, one of the most recent WWE departures that really gained some attention was Samantha Irvin leaving and the following that she had carved out in recent years. Is it humbling to you? I know you famously said all you did was announce weights, places, and names, but is it humbling to you to know that that many people remember you, to know that your place in professional wrestling is something that people remember so fondly?
It is humbling, but it's hard for me to recognize it because I was doing something that I loved. I mean, on one hand, it was something I loved, and it was also my job. I never did anything so that something will be seen, in 40 years and remembered fondly. I just reacted to what was going on. I was very fortunate that Gorilla Monsoon put me in a position where the spotlight had shone on me. And no matter how much Vinny tried to bury me in like not featuring me, there was a connection that I always had with fans. And I can't explain it, but I know what they were thinking. And how they were feeling, they were identifying with me because I was a smaller guy. I was more serious. I was the opposite of the craziness that was going on around me. And because I had formed a bond with the fans, whenever a wrestler would mess with me, they would really get angry at that wrestler. But I never ever knew anything was coming. There was never anything planned. It was just all very organic. They wanted, the wrestler wanted to play that night. So that's what happened, and that's what they did.
It's a big
And
improv back in those days. It wasn't scripted, right?
yes, that's exactly right. So I would just react as anyone, even though we were friends, that's not who we were in the ring. I was a civilian. They were professional athletes. They were professional wrestlers. So it would make absolutely no sense for me to stand up to any of the guys when I would backstage. So I just learned to roll with the punches, literally. So it is humbling. I'll hear more from people who say, "You were the voice of my childhood." That's something I hear often. And I can relate because when I was a kid, there were certain things that I watched on TV daily or weekly. When I would watch the Three Stooges, for instance, every city had a host that, like
We had
in.
Captain Chesapeake here. He was really kind of a big deal.
There you go. They had Sally Starr in Philadelphia. They had Officer Joe Bolton in New
We had
York.
Captain 20 in channel. You were on channel 20.
Zachary, who was, the horror movie host. So they, and so I remember all, those characters fondly because of I grew up with them. I like to go to rock and roll shows, like oldie shows, because I grew up with them. I can remember what was going on in my life when that song was popular. So in the same way, people remember that part of their childhood when they used to watch wrestling every week, and that my voice, they would identify with it. So in that way,
I still
I do
identify
enjoy
with it, Gary. I can't believe you're the Gary Michael Capetta. You sounded
it.
younger on my television 40 years ago, you know? And I
Yeah.
can still emulate you. And when you say I don't know, idolize is the right word, but certainly I went down to the Civic Center and you weren't the announcer, and I was a little disappointed. The announcer kind of like he was a really old dude in Baltimore. He clearly had a deal with Chester O'Sullivan and the guy, you mentioned Zacco, the people that were doing he you just weren't they weren't paying you $20 to drive down from Philly to do it. You did
You
your gig
know,
during the week. But by the way, I found this on page 91 of this magazine. Of course, it's 1979 this was written. So Gino is in here, and it's like a profile of his life. It mentions his children, comes from Rochester, Minnesota. He started in the YMCA programs. You know, he talks about like his life travels and all that stuff. Like this, you couldn't get any of that anywhere in 1979, Gary.
yeah,
That's what
well,
I'm
no, it was ahead of
saying.
its time for sure. There's a Gorilla Monsoon biography coming out next year that is, I'm really looking forward to it. I interviewed for it, and it's being done by a guy who does a very good job with biographies.
All right,
So, was that?
last thing for you. I'm gonna give you last piece here. We
Yep.
lost the great Phil Jackman here about 2 months ago, and Phil was a godfather to me. Hockey, you know, a longtime columnist at the Baltimore Evening Sun for sports. But Phil was very playful, had a sense of humor. But Phil covered Wimbledon, a dozen Olympics, just all sorts of things. But Phil loved wrestling, and Phil was a guy who would play along and treat it seriously. When he would write his columns, he would have a little thing about it. But for whatever reason, and Phil's got a million stories. I mean, Phil sat ringside at every Ali fight, Sugar Ray, like everything, like all of that. And but he loved to tell the story to me and his kids and his family about the night he went drinking with Andre the Giant. And he had a story that he and Andre were out drinking all night down at the Belvedere, and they went into an alley, and a cop pulled in and put the lights on them, and they're pissing in the alley. And Phil was, you know, 5'11", and Andre was what Andre was. Did you ever take a bump from Andre? I mean, you got an Andre story for me, man?
No, I never.
Just when I ask a
My
question
projector.
about Andre, we lose Gary, Luke. Look at that. He's exited. Just like Andre.
Hopefully one of Vince Senior's guys didn't get to
Yeah.
him.
We hope to get Gary back in here, and I will continue. If not, we'll take a break. I'm Nestor. He's Gary Michael Capetta. You know, he's not even here for me to, and I'm laughing. I can't do my Gary Michael Capetta because if I knew we were here, I could do it really well, man. I do a great Gary Michael Capetta.
I wanted to get him to give us a Let the War Games Begin because Survivor Series is coming up this week for WWE, and War Games has been integrated into the Survivor Series pay-per-view in WWE at this point. So I was hoping to get a little Let the War Games
Oh
Begin.
man,
It's
this
all
is
good.
terrible, you know.
It's all
Well, if you're
good.
out on the Zoom, here's what I'll do. I'm gonna shut my video off, and I'm just gonna do it for audio purposes only, and Luke can laugh. Welcome to another action-packed card of Championship Wrestling. These matches are sanctioned and supervised by the State Athletic Commission. The timekeeper at the bell, Jim McHugh. That's a pretty good Gary Michael
That's
Capetta,
good.
if you go back. I don't know the All-Star Wrestling one. I just know the championship. Sanctioned and supervised by the State Athletic Commission. Gary Michael Capetta, his work is available at Body Slams out on the interwebs. This crazy book is called Main Event. I hope it's worth $100 on the internet. I bent the frame on it now, but I will hold it near and dear. I haven't even read the Dusty Rhodes section yet or the Ricky Steamboat section. Luke and I try to get together and talk wrestling once in a while. We talked lots and lots of football, lots and lots of baseball, and lately around here for the Thanksgiving holiday, lots and lots of rock and roll. You can find us both out at WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.